Hey there, welcome to another episode of Close to the Vest. My name is Arthur Ettinger, and where we talk all things relationship-wise. So, you know, today I'm really psyched to have in the studio Elliot Zellinger, Senior Managing Director of Savit Partners. Elliot, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me, I'm excited.
So, you know, I've done a lot of different podcasts. People say, oh, well, I don't know how this relates. You're a divorce attorney. You know, why would a commercial real estate broker want to talk about divorce? And the way I see this is more about relationships. Okay, this is a relationship-driven podcast, and you're in the relationship business. So before we do a deep dive, just tell the audience what you do.
Exactly. I think you said it best. I'm in the relationship business. You could also say I'm in the information business. So what I do is I help companies with their office space requirements, whether it's finding new space, handling a lease renewal, they might want to sublet their space, the lease is set to expire and they're not sure how to handle the conversations going forward. So essentially what I do is I act as these companies' in-house real estate department.
I love that. And you know, I say this a lot, and I'm curious to hear what your thoughts are. I say, whether it's a personal relationship or a professional relationship, those relationships live and die on leases in Manhattan. Care to comment on that? I know a lot of partnerships have, let's say, broken up because a lease is coming due, someone doesn't want to be bound, you know, we're going to sign a 10-year lease. I have to believe that you've seen that in your experience.
I have, and well said. Let's focus on the live part, not the die part. But I think a lot of times when companies are making decisions, like you just mentioned, about signing the length of a lease, there's different partners, people have different interests. One partner might want a 3-year lease, might want a 10-year lease. So part of my job is to manage that relationship, understand what each individual's motives are, and then bring it together for the firm.
I love that, and I want to dive deeper on that. I think what we both do, we both are in the business of dealing with major life changes. And it's clear, obviously, divorce is a major life change. You get married, it's a major life change. But can you share with the audience why signing a lease is a major life change?
It's a major life change, I think, because for most occupiers of office space, your rent is one of your largest expenses. So behind payroll and maybe human capital benefits, rent is the next largest expense. So it's almost like you can't be wrong. You have to make the right decision, because making a wrong decision about your office space could be detrimental to your business. And for most people, business is such a big part of your life. You rely on your business, you're in your office, possibly more than your home every day.
Yeah.
But it's how you provide for your family.
Sure.
So making the right decision is kind of like what you said about making right life decisions. That's where I come into play and help my clients with those decisions.
And so I want to go back. Okay, I know I'm bouncing around. It's my ADD kicking in. Let's go into your background. And I'd love to just have you share, you know, how you got into commercial real estate and your journey into where you are today.
Sure. I think for me, let's go back and I'll start my college years. I was a psych major at Binghamton University, and I was also the manager of the basketball team when we went to Division
One.
Yeah, 2001, our first year Division One.
That is so cool.
It was great. I
love
it.
I had no idea.
Yeah, I was on the court actually at the Dean Dome. We played North Carolina, lost by a point. It was on SportsCenter's top 10 plays. I'll never forget it. But to your question, you know, of course, interest in sports psychology. Why not be in commercial real estate? I'm kidding. But it's, I think, what drew me to the business after college, using my psych background to really understand how to sell, how to identify relationships, how to maintain relationships, managing expectations is a big part of what I do.
I love that. That is so,
so key. In some ways, psychology is, you know, one of the roles I play. I'm a real estate broker. I'm a psychologist. I'm the in-house department for information. But the psychology hat is paramount to my success today.
And, you know, there's, so I know you come from a family of psychologists. I was going to get to it later on, but since you...
I opened the psychology
book. You did, so why don't we go there now? So you studied psychology. You, for those that don't know, you grew up in a house of psychologists. You're married to a psychologist. Mm-hmm. Why didn't you follow in your parents' footsteps?
It's a great question. I was a psych major and I loved it. And I think for me, just the excitement of entering the business world, that really is what got me going when it came to making a career decision after college. So I was just interested in New York City, real estate, a sales profession, and I ran with it.
And did your parents in any way try to, you know, push you into, let's say, a therapy track?
You'd love to know what a Sunday night dinner at my family was like growing up, right?
So they weren't like, oh,
no,
you want...
No, they weren't. I'm one of four boys. I have three brothers. And to my parents' credit, they never pushed us in any direction or to pursue any careers. They really encouraged us to find our own interests, passion, and were supportive in the process. So I'm very thankful to them not pushing in a direction and me, and I can speak for my brothers too, letting us find our own path.
That's really awesome. That's healthy. I think most of us would probably say that, you know, that may not be the case growing up. I know that there was a lot of pressure in my house, and so kudos to your parents, because you also, we learn how to parent, and you're a parent by our parents. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, kudos to your family for allowing you to spread your wings on your own. So in similar vein, now you graduate, you want to jump into the commercial real estate world. Was there like a special mentor for you that really played an impact in your career?
I can't name one who guided me. I think I had mentors, both good and bad, which I think also shaped a lot of my history in the business. I learned from different people over the years how to conduct yourselves and also how not to conduct yourselves.
I love that.
And that might have been, you know, more beneficial for me in the long run, as far as knowing how to carry myself, how to be a professional. So I can't pinpoint one, but just several experiences over the years that I've taken a little bit from each step to get to where I am today.
Can you share an experience? First, like the good experience, something you said, you know what, I want to role model that. I want to follow in those footsteps. You know, not the person, but just certain, whatever that personality trait was.
You know, just certain nuggets of information over the years that stick with me. One was very early on in my career. Look, it's an overwhelming business. Being out of school is a lot to learn. Just being able to say, I don't know, but I'll get back to you. You know, something as small as that was very helpful. You don't have to have every answer all the time. How to follow up with people appropriately, how to give certain information, how to work hard, persistence, how to think outside the box. These are a lot of traits that I've learned that...
It's awesome.
I take with me.
And, you know, we're both in service businesses. And sometimes you're too busy, you're meeting with somebody else. And I think with this day and age, people want immediate responses. Even if it's, I got your text, I'll call you back, or I'll get back to you, goes a long way than not responding at all. And I know I can be guilty of that. So I think that's really a valuable, like, as you say, nugget.
Right, and to what you just said, back to my early comment about managing expectations. I think even if I just say, got your text, I'll get back to you tomorrow, now that person knows when they can expect to hear from me.
So let's talk about that, managing expectations. Do you find yourself in scenarios where your client just has really unrealistic expectations?
All the time. And I think now more than ever that's the case. There's a lot of noise in the market. People read headlines. Some of it's true, some's not. But once people have a certain idea in their head, sometimes it's hard to change that. And they come to me to be a professional and to give advice and to give information. And as long as I'm giving honest information and advice, that's my job.
Can you give it, like, what's an unrealistic expectation, let's say, that one would have, and how are you approaching it?
I just remember one example during the pandemic. There was a sublease done on Park Avenue. It was headlines in the paper. I think it said something, 20,000 square foot lease on Park Avenue for $19 a square foot. I don't remember the number. For the next day, everyone called me, and people think that's the market. But what the story didn't tell was that was a short-term sublet for 9 months. So that's not indicative of where the market it was. This was a specific tenant who was just looking to unload their space for a low rent for 9 months. But people hear that 19 a square foot, and now I have to educate them, that really explain that that was just an outlier. Here's what's really going on.
So do you find yourself, you lose the potential clients as you have to roll back their expectations? Is it more challenging? I'm guessing as you build up your reputation, you know, what you say, people are going to accept what you say as being true.
That's usually the case. And if people question it or want to get another opinion, that's fine too. More often than not, they'll come back to me and, you know, realize that what I've said was factual and accurate, because my clients know I genuinely do have their best interests at heart.
Have you ever fired clients?
I have. It took me a while to get to that point. I think that was a big turning point in my career, when I value my morals and my time more than the potential deal. If I know that that client doesn't treat me with the same respect, then it's not going to be a two-way relationship, and that doesn't work for me.
Sure. You know, we say a lot in my practice, you're not only judged by the cases that you take, but also on the cases that you don't take. You know, and so I think there's a lot of similarities there. I have to believe that you're often found in scenarios where you're showing people space and you're showing them and you're grinding, and next thing you know, they go in a different direction.
It happens. Typically about 90% of the time, I would say I work with clients exclusively. That's important to me, that to know that if you want me and my team and the best of us, I want that to be reciprocal.
Sure.
So when you work exclusively with the tenant, you have more control. So they're less likely to call you and say, sorry, I took a space with a different broker.
Sure.
And that way we really work collaboratively and our interests are aligned. So it's usually leads to a better result for everyone. So I, you know, typically avoid those situations like you just mentioned by working exclusively with the customer.
That makes sense. Just for those who don't know, just I think it's important to explain, like, how you're compensated. You're like, you're not paid like an hourly rate, right, or a fee up front. So just explain how you know what the fee structure is.
Sure. So we represent tenants. That's the bulk of my business. And our fiduciary duty is to the tenant, but we're paid a fee by the landlord. So it's a very natural relationship between us and the tenant. And the industry fee structure is such that it promotes cooperation between the landlord's broker and the tenant's broker. So we're not fighting over the same commission. There's no questioning of whose interests are at stake. It's industry standard for the landlord to pay one commission to the tenant's broker and a half a commission to its leasing agent.
Got it.
So that really, like I said, promotes ClearPath.
And so before we were talking about people that have impacted you, and you were, you mentioned there are things that were good and things that were bad. So let's deal with the juicy stuff. Let's deal with the stuff that you didn't want to emulate.
I can't mention names or places, but I've seen situations where brokers would take commission checks, you know, from the companies they work for. I've seen situations where brokers were dishonest, were asking tenants for commission when they were really being paid by the landlord, not disclosing that. So, you know, you see people's true character sometimes in tougher times. And fortunately or unfortunately, I've seen a lot of positive and negative experiences. And, you know, I've always chosen to take the high road.
Now, it is uber competitive here in Manhattan.
Yeah.
You know, everybody knows a broker. Everybody knows a residential broker. Everybody knows a commercial broker. What separates you from the pack?
I think my authenticity. I think you know what you're going to get. I'm honest about it and I deliver. And I think my clients like that. They know I'm reachable 24/7. Everyone has my cell phone. I don't draw a distinction between my work life, my professional life. And I think people know that they're just getting reliability, honesty, and determination as much as anything.
I know I can speak personally. I've known you for the greater part of a decade, and I think you're awesome. You're my go-to, and that, like, you know, we talked before we started filming about loyalty and persistence, and I think you truly embody those characteristics.
Thank you, I appreciate
and
that.
And I think that's really important in any relationship. You know, if you're gonna trust somebody, to be able to know that person's going to the mat for you. So
right. That's and I think that's one of the similarities between both of our businesses and why we get along so well.
So you mentioned before when we were talking about some things to talk about, relationship with, let's say, a client, a business, and management evolves, changes. Help us understand how that impacts your role.
Sure. So a lot of the time at an organization, I'm dealing with one of a few roles. Could be the president, CEO, CFO, director of operations. Those are usually the titles who are making decisions about real estate. So we'll take CFO, for example. I could have a great relationship with a CFO, and this has happened where I've placed them, I've done their lease renewal, and then what happens when that CFO leaves the organization?
Sure.
Does my relationship with the organization change? It definitely changes. I may or may not maintain the relationship, and I've been in both ways where new management has come in, almost like a new coach in sports. That new coach will bring in his or her assistants, and the existing coaches, you know, might be out of a job. So I've been on both sides, but that's why it's so important, because that CFO could land somewhere else, and then he could be with an organization triple the size. When it comes to making a decision about office space, I want to be that first phone call. So you never know who's going to be where, what companies are going to go out of business, what companies are going to get acquired. So I think just staying level-headed and maintaining that relationship, even if there's not a transaction at stake, will help me in the long run.
And you also talked about it's not as important for you to do that initial deal, but you're looking long-term. Can you just shed some light on what you're referring to there?
Yeah, long-term, a large part of my business is lease renewals. So finding space is great. That's what people think of when you hear a broker. Let me go find a broker to help me find a space. But what happens when that lease expires? What happens when that company needs to grow? Chances are there's probably going to be a transaction between lease commencement and lease expiration,
sure.
Whether it's a sublease taking more space than anything I just mentioned. And that's what I rely on, the lease renewal, the next deal. I want that person to be so happy that they tell their friends and clients about my services. And that's happened. There's one example, which is a great example of that. I went on a birthright trip with my younger brother in 2008, 2009, went to Israel, had a great time. And there was someone on our trip I met, got along really well. And he said to me, Elliot, there's a recruiting firm I know. They're looking for space. I don't know them well enough to make an introduction, but go canvass them, go stop by. And I did. I just went over in the middle of the day, no appointment, met the two principals. I said, I want to show you one space. It'll take 20 minutes. Do you have time to take a walk with me? It's a few blocks away. If that's not the space for you, I'll leave. That's it. I'm done. And they looked at each other. I said, sure. Took them over to a space, 8 West 38th Street, the 12th floor. The tenant was Atlantic Group. And they called me that afternoon. They said, you're right. We want it. Fast forward. Moved them into that space, relocated them 7 years later, and just this year did my third long-term lease with them as I renewed them on 34th Street. So what started with, you know, blind canvas now has led to a 15, 20-year relationship that is continuing to grow.
I also look at it like your story ended, you know, oh, I showed them the space and they took the space. There has to be so many stories where they saw the space and they weren't ready. But then you continued, you cultivated that relationship, and ultimately, like, I know you from looking at space, but we didn't do a deal.
Right.
I know the next time I need space, you're the guy. You know, you cultivated that relationship. It's like, you know, I'm in the baseball space. You know, it's a game of failure.
Right.
You know, you got to keep persistent. You know, you got to keep trying. You got to get back up. You got to keep dealing with it. And you keep adding to the goodwill. Eventually, you're gonna get a payout.
That's what I believe. I think, like we talked about, honesty, hard work, hanging around the hoop, good things will come. And we'll get there. We're 0-2, but we'll be 1-3.
No, I promise you, you know, and...
I'm not worried about it.
So I'd be remiss if I didn't cover, you know, business disputes, business divorces. It's a fact of life. How does that affect you? I know you talked about change of management, which may not be a business divorce, but sometimes, let's say the two decision makers or the three decision makers of a organization end up, you know, becoming at odds and they go their separate ways. How does that affect your role as the commercial broker?
That's a tough one because I get to know my clients so well, working on deals and maintaining relationships, and when things go sour, nobody expects it. But what I try to do is just make sure that my relationship is with the company. Ultimately, I'm hired to provide advisory services to that organization and to really do my best to put the personal differences aside.
Sure.
And I think, unfortunately, it happens, and especially in relationships with landlords, not as much amongst the partners, but what happens if a tenant can't pay rent? During the pandemic, we dealt with a lot of this. Lease deferrals, people trying to get out of their leases. And in a lot of ways, that's like a divorce. Figuring out exit strategies that no one's done before. During the pandemic, there was a lot of novel clauses written into leases. So just, you know, being aware, listening to the partners, and just understanding that it's not personal. Everyone's goal is the same. If these partners might want to exit, it's my job to help them exit amicably to the extent I can, you know, relate to their office space.
Sure. I remember during the pandemic, you talk about the pandemic and just a lot of shifting. I remember one of my old partners who they represented, you know, a big accounting firm, and they were so busy just renegotiating on a national level all of these leases. Are you still seeing that the climate right now in Manhattan?
We're seeing a lot of adjustments, I would say, less so related to pandemic disputes and workouts, but now we're seeing more related to financing. So there's a lot of loans coming due, a lot of landlords are gonna be losing their buildings, some have already. It creates different relationships between landlord and tenants as far as lease terms, renewals, there's a lot of vacancy coming online in the market. So now we're seeing a lot of workouts like we did during COVID, but really more between the landlord and the lender versus the tenant and landlord. And that's something we're going to see a lot of in the next couple of years.
And I know a lot of law firms are requiring people to come back. I know you and I, we joked that Zoom is requiring in person. Mm-hmm. Are you seeing that in the market across the board, that people are coming back, or is it still the shift of the, I guess my question is, what's the new normal in office space?
So it's a great question. And I think if we look at pre-COVID, then people aren't coming back in that sense. But since the pandemic started in 2020, this is our fourth year now. So post Labor Day, we've seen more traffic in the city than we have any of the 3 years prior. So that's a good marker. I think occupancy right now, I heard, was somewhere around 60%, which is up from where it was in Q2. So I think there's definitely been a stronger return to office this year. And to your point about law firms, actually, law firms for the past 2 quarters this year have accounted for the highest leasing volume of any trade. It was financial services for a long time, but now law firms and financial services are industries leading the return to office, it seems like.
And are there still deals to be had in the market?
There's always deals to be had. I think what's important is that every situation is different. What defines a deal? Is it caliber of building? Is it the price? Is it flexibility on a lease term? Is it location driven? So there's deals out there if you work with me. But it's really identifying what you're looking for.
You know, and this, as you're talking, I can't stop thinking about how that translates to personal relationships. And when I was dating, I remember I used to say, you know, dating is like looking for an apartment in Manhattan. You know, you want the split bedrooms, you want the eat-in kitchen, you want the terrace, but you got to compromise, yeah. You know? And what you're saying is there's, you may want that A building, but the layout may not be.
Right, definitely compromise.
It's really funny. Yeah. Talk to me about like a success story in your mind that maybe it wasn't, whether it's a financial success story or it was a relationship. I know you talked about the Atlantic Group.
Yeah.
And that's an awesome story.
Yeah.
Is there another story that maybe sticks out in your mind that was, you know, maybe, you know, catapulted your career or somehow impacted you really positively?
There's a lot. It's hard to pinpoint one. You know, each deal in and of itself has a different meaning for me. But I think one I could talk about, there's a court reporting company, a referral from a friend of mine who worked at the company at the time. And I was introduced to the CEO of the company 6 months after they moved into a new space.
Oh, wow.
And they signed a 10-year lease. And I said to myself, I will do their next deal. So for 9 years, I was following up with this person and finding an angle to get in. And I made sure that I was doing his next deal. And it was not an easy personality to deal with. But we made it work, and once the deal was done, it was just a testament to, like, a load off my back. I felt relieved but accomplished, and, you know, we talk about persistence, and what better example than chasing a deal for 9 years and then finally coming to fruition.
That's awesome. And then what about the flip side? Is there a deal that just, you know, maybe it even worked out well, but it left you, like, a bad taste in your mouth? Is there something that, or just maybe you question, do I even want to continue doing this?
There's definitely a few of those, but it's New York City. You have to turn the page quickly. You have to move on, and I try to. I try to have a short memory when things like that happen.
Earlier on, you talked about, you know, essentially you bring work home with you. You're always working. Does that impact your personal relationship? I know you're happily married, you have two awesome kids. I have an issue setting boundaries and, you know, turning off work. And I have to believe, you know, in a lot of respects, we are similarly connected and chained to our phone and our devices. And does that negatively impact your relationships on the home front?
It's always a balance. I think you said it well. We're both in industries where your clients want you to be available and rely on you. I try hard to have certain boundaries. I make sure I'm around my kids as much as I can. If I get to drive them each to school one day a week, I'm going to do that. Weekends, nights, I'm at every birthday party. I try to be home for dinner when I can. And even if I have to shut off professionally for a couple hours, maybe by 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night, then that might be time I catch up on emails and prioritize for the next day. So I make sure that I'm present and set certain boundaries. You know, there's certain times, certain days where my family comes first. And at the same time, I'm fortunate that my wife is supportive and understands my profession, and me taking that phone call at 8:30 in the middle of dinner might lead to that next deal. So fortunately, you know, she understands my business, how it works, and is very supportive.
And we're going to talk a little bit more about her in a second. Is there any advice that you would give to somebody now that, let's say, is jumping in and looking for commercial office space?
The industry has changed a lot, let's just say that, from when I started to now, really just by how easily accessible information is. Social media, relationships out there, people canvassing. It used to be hard to get into buildings. It's different now, security. So things have changed in that regard. But I think, you know, what I would say to a young person is stay consistent. Figure out what works for you and just stay level-headed. You know, there's going to be highs, there's going to be lows, but really stay even-keeled, and that's the best way to balance out the ups and downs. And ask questions. Sure. You know, learn. You're always learning. I mean, I'm doing this 17 years, but every day I'm learning something new. No two deals are the same. So that would be my biggest takeaways, is just being consistent, being present, and ask questions.
And would you say that where the market is right now, it makes sense to do, like you mentioned, a 10-year deal, or is there a better sweet spot?
It really depends on the company, what their interests are. Sure. Some businesses, typically professional service businesses, are comfortable signing longer leases when an early stage company, a tech company, might not know what's going to be in a year or two, and maybe for them a shorter lease makes sense. So there's no standard on that. It's really case by case.
And so you're talking about home life balance. Does the commercial broker, does Elliot Zellinger, work from home? Does he come into the office 5 days a week? Like, in the context, I understand you're prioritizing and you're balancing depending on the day. Do you work from home? Is it a hybrid situation?
I'm in the office more than I am home. Typically my schedule, I'm in the office Monday to Thursday, and Fridays I'll work from home. So when I talked about boundaries, Friday is typically the day when I'll drop my kids off at school, pick them up, any personal items I have to take care of, any clerical administrative functions, I'll do Friday. So where I'm at right now is I'm typically in the office Monday to Thursday, and Friday will be a work from home day.
So this morning we discussed, and you mentioned, WeWork declared bankruptcy. How does that impact, A, the work, the work structure, this new hybrid model, the working from home, the going in, and how does it affect in any way your business?
So I think first of all with WeWork, the situation is still very fluid. It's going to take time before it really shakes out, but my business automatically, the light bulb goes off that there's a lot of tenants in these WeWork buildings who now need space. So that's an opportunity for myself and other brokers to do deals with these tenants. But I do believe that managed workspaces are here to stay. I think flexibility is key. Not every company wants their own dedicated space. So WeWork might be an example of a company who it didn't work out for, but I think there are other shared providers. There is a need in the market for a shared workspace.
Without getting too lost in the weeds, because I agree that, we're never going back to that traditional work environment. Why did the WeWork model, and listen, we all know bankruptcy doesn't necessarily mean it's over for WeWork, but why are they where they are now?
I think without getting into the weeds, I think they grew too quickly. I think WeWork was signing a lot of leases at the height of the market. When the demand wasn't there as quickly as they were taking spaces. And I think they lost focus about what the company is and really shifted more towards a lifestyle brand when in actually it's a real estate company. So I think they lost focus of their goals and how they started out as a company.
So we touched upon it before. Work-life balance, creating, boundaries and having supportive people around you and your wife being supportive of what you do. So your wife is also a psychologist. Mm-hmm. And I think, so how does that, how does that impact your personal relationship? I have to believe it's really good. You've already told us some great positive things that have come out of it, but can you just expound a little further on it?
Yeah, sure. I think what it really does is allows us to communicate. And that's most important, I think, in any relationship, personal, professional. We make sure to tell each other how we feel. I think a lot of couples, especially nowadays with kids, professional lives, don't communicate as often as they would. Things build up, or don't know how to communicate. You're
sure.
So fixated on what's in front of you. So I think we really know how to just separate and talk. And the message is clear. Whether it's what we want to hear or not, I think we both go to bed every night with a clear mind and good and bad.
That.
I think
that's awesome.
Really how we stay together.
That really resonates. The message is clear. And so many relationships fall apart because of unclear messages. One person's doing all the communicating, the other person is, going within and or leaving the marriage, whether it's emotionally or is just shutting down. And everything, it's about communication.
Absolutely.
So during the pandemic, and she's not here, there's no microphone here for her, at least right now, and I'd love to have her on, but I saw tremendous amounts, as did many matrimonial lawyers, of domestic violence, and it was really, really horrible, especially at the time when police were not doing anything. And she had to have been dealing with some really tough stuff. Was she able to separate herself from her work coming home? Because you guys have little kids.
Right. I think she did a great job of it. And this is a second career for my wife, so she actually just went back to school during the pandemic. So talk about her resilience of having two kids at home, a new career in the middle of a pandemic. So credit to her for even embarking on that journey at that time.
And you're not dealing and doing any deals. It's the pandemic, mm-hmm. and she's changing her career.
Yeah.
So that's another stressor top of what was going on in our world.
Yeah.
Did you guys have any, stumbling blocks, or you guys powered through? Well, you obviously powered through.
We powered through. We had no choice. We knew, I mentioned that how supportive she is in my journey, and I'd like to think I was the same way. I knew that this was important to her. This was a new career. It was a change, and I do have some experience in the field, so I was able to help out a little bit when I could. But she really put her head down, went through it, and flourished as a student, a professional, and as a mom as well.
Awesome. And is there any other special sauce that you can impart on audience for maybe people who they're navigating some tough challenges in their relationship? They haven't given up, and they're still trying to make a go of their marriage or relationship. What can you share, anything other than what you've already shared?
I think it's a lot easier to fix what you have in front of you versus going out and starting fresh elsewhere. People probably think the grass is always greener, and it's usually not the case. So whatever the issue is now that's causing that frustration or that dissonance, I think, can probably be worked out easier than you think.
I love that. And if somebody wants to get in touch with you, how do they reach you?
I'm easy to find. Cell is always best. Call, text, email, LinkedIn, any of the above.
And when is the best time for...
Now. When is the best time? I know your question. When is the best time for a company to engage me as their broker, right?
Amazing.
See that? Where there's never a bad time. I think too many times companies will only think of the broker when there's a transaction involved. But why not have the advice of a professional on call? You might read something in the paper and sparks a thought. Hey, Elliot, there's 6 years left in my lease, but I read this building being converted next door to me. Does that affect me? We could have a conversation. It doesn't have to be transaction driven. Sure. So I think if companies realize that, they'll be better off.
Shohei Ohtani, where does he land?
That's a good question. Giants.
Interesting. So listen, I think you're awesome. And for those people out there who are thinking or need, may need in the future, a commercial real estate broker, Elliot Zellinger is your go-to guy. Elliot, thanks so much for coming. I have one last question.
Yes.
I ask all my guests. I'm a sneaker guy. What is your go-to sneaker?
Great question. I wasn't expecting that one. I'm not a sneaker guy, but I'm going to go with Cole Haan.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the Cole Haans. I'm wearing a pair today. Comfortable, professional, casual. So I'm a Cole Haan guy.
So I'm going to give you a little tidbit of knowledge that you may not have known, but do you know that Nike bought Cole Haan?
I did not.
Yeah, that's why at some
point confidential
Cole Haan got really comfortable. Oh. No, this is public. I think at some point they sold it off, but you know, they also own Converse. Anyway, that's cool.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you so much for
coming.
Great,
thanks for having me. Awesome. Really enjoyed it. Thanks. Yeah.